5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Earth below us, drifting, falling, flow.
Welcome to AnnaZone 23, where we look at old anime, especially movies and OVAs. These are the films and projects that help shape the anime landscape as we know it today. We want to look at them in their own era and how they were the inspiration for many of the shows and franchises that are popular today. Some have become legends, while others have been deservedly forgotten. All of them, you should remind yourself, someone had to draw that. Thanks, Major Tom. Hello, and welcome to AnnaZone 23, and on this week we are continuing our discussion from last week. I'm Rick.
I'm Drew.
And we are talking about some further fantasy shows this week. Well, we went from
You could almost say a double fantasy.
Yeah. We went from the absolute leviathans that are Record of Lodoss, War, and Slayers, and going to something a little bit smaller and a little bit less household name, let's say.
Especially the first.
This week we're talking about Ruin Explorers and Dragon Half. Now both of these start off as not quite one shot. Well, we'll get to Dragon Half, but Ruin Explorers is actually an amazingly short manga. It's only 2 volumes, for a total of, it looks like about 6 chapters across 2 volumes. It's kind of one of those weird ones where like chapters are like split up into parts. Like chapter 5 has 9 parts for some reason.
It's very professionally drawn. It looks like it was done by somebody as their side project.
This is a really weird. So my wife and I, Kelsey and I, found this show just kind of browsing through stuff one day. Actually we found it by watching AMV Hells. If any of you are younger or older and you remember that, or if you're younger and you don't remember that, back in kind of the pre-YouTube days, early YouTube days, there was these comedy compilations called AMV Hells. And what they were is basically a bunch of people submitted. First off, we'll use this opportunity because we haven't talked about it before. Drew, would you like to kind of describe to people AMVs?
Okay. The AMV is a slightly different thing. That is just an anime music video. That is, we're going to take some chunk of an anime and we're going to record it. And there are a number of ways to do this. The old-fashioned and painfully slow way was to record a series of blocks of video. And you had to have a special type of VCR, which had what was called a flying erase head. And a flying erase head would let you put a different soundtrack over that tape. So you would put the music to your favorite AMV, to your favorite anime, and then you would cut scenes over the music. And until computers got good enough to make this doable, this was an incredible pain in the butt. And then it became really easy, and everybody made them by the thousands.
Yeah, because by the early 2000s.
Really good one, if you see a really good one, they're amazing. But you're going to dig through a lot of shit to get to the pony at the bottom.
Yeah, well, because by the mid-2000s, every single Mac had iMovie, and every single PC had Windows Movie Maker. I mean, even
I
made
an memory that they could keep up with it, which...
Mm-hmm. I made an AMV. It was kind of an evolution of one where I took a certain movie's audio and set it to a certain noir giant robot show. And if anyone can find that on YouTube, I give you kudos. I will not pay you any money.
I actually submitted one to
Otakon?
1 year. Yep, didn't get into the finals.
But
I did it the old-fashioned way with tape. God, that was a pain in the ass.
Kind of with the explosion.
I actually made 2. I never put the second one out.
Kind of with the explosion of the availability of film or video editing software was this concept of, it was around 2004, I think, was the when I first became aware of it, these things called AMV Hell.
AMV Hell essentially was Vine before Vine. It was these short little vignettes that they put together into a larger video file that would, in some cases, go over an hour and a half. They made 7 of them. And by the early 2010s, they were doing these AMV minis, where they were the same idea as AMV Hell, but they were all based on a single theme. And we saw this one show while watching one of these AMV minis. And my wife and I were like, what is that show? Because we were interested by the character design. So we looked it up on the index, and we found out a show called Ruin Explorers. Well, we searched it out, and we were actually really surprised by what we came across. Because what we came across was a show that, while not exactly forgotten, is certainly not one that is in common parlance today. Like, it's not in the common discussion at all. Sorry, parlance is the wrong word for that. But definitely not in common discussion. Like, when was the last time you went to a con? And
this isn't even a frontage road.
Yeah. Like, when was the last time you were at a con and you heard about anyone talk about the 90s classic Ruin Explorers?
Otakon 1, or OhioCon 1 in Cleveland. Because they were talking to one of the voice actresses who did the screaming when the block came down, and what they were exactly saying when you couldn't quite hear them, but you thought you were cussing up a storm.
Screaming, that was probably Fom, which meant Jessica Calvello.
I believe it was Jessica Calvello.
Who's best known as the hand-picked English voice of Cutie Honey in the 90s. Actually, they brought her back for Universe, by the way. She worked on the most recent one. And we actually got to speak with her.
But anyway,
in the 90s one is still her favorite.
The thing about the 90s one, we'll get to that one. That one's weird.
We will. I want to do a whole Cutie Honey show.
That's a very weird thing. but the thing about it is, it's kind of ADV shovelware. It's one of those things ADV threw out when they were throwing out a video or two, about, you know, a video a week almost. And they packaged it, I think it was in 2 volumes originally, and it went to 1 volume on disc. It might have been originally released all as one, but I think it was done as a two-parter. And it's essentially just a one-off fantasy story from a very short manga about two characters who starts out with two characters. It ends with a party of about 5 or 6, and they go into ruins and try to find stuff. It's kind of like your dungeon crawl with about half the monsters and all the traps.
So I want to go ahead and talk about the characters in this, because it's got a little bit of a different party setup for a fantasy RPG style show manga. I mean, first off, what's different about this one, instead of being a grand quest, it's like the storyline is a singular quest. Like, you know, if you're playing an MMO, you'd go and you start the quest line, it's like, do this, do this, do this, do this. And that's all it is. It's not a grand quest. It's just like a singular quest that takes part maybe like 1 or 2 different dungeons. But our main two characters are Eerie, who is a sorceress sword fighter who has a curse and a secret, which we'll get to. Drew, kind of my first thought on her is the fact that she kind of dresses like a knockoff Lena Inverse.
A little bit. Although, leaning into the armor makes her look like some refugee from something from Games Workshop.
A little bit, yeah.
She's really rocking those Warhammer shoulder pads.
Remember, a lot of the people in Slayers rock those shoulder pads too, because Gowrie's got those shoulder pads, so does Lena.
That's true.
And Gowrie, Naga, for that matter.
Gowrie's got the shoulder pads, but Lena doesn't have the shoulder pads.
No, her cape has shoulder pads.
Yeah, but they're not that big.
No, they're not and that they're big. Not, no. And as soon as she takes the cape off, she loses the shoulder pads. So,
right.
And then we have Fom, who's our other main character. Now, note, both our main characters, at least in the beginning, like our core two, are girls. There's no, you know, male-female dynamic, or even, you know, boys club kind of thing. They're both girls. That's not that common. Especially when you're
Fom's a cat girl or something.
She's an elf. She's a There's kind of a... She does have a tail. There's sort of a... there's a little bit of an elf trope that I've seen in a few different type of fantasy stuff that kind of is inspired out of Japanese, you know, stuff called a wild elf. So it actually kind of describes this in the manga, because I actually looked through that a little bit before we started recording this. So apparently her race, she's, I call her the druid, but her race is actually Wiccan. Yeah, as in, like, pagan witchcraft.
She's a fawn from,
Sort of, yeah.
She's a fawn from Warcraft.
That's kind of the way I sort of see it. She's a wild elf, is the way I kind of describe it. But they really just...
If she looks like a cat girl, darn it. Yeah,
because if you look at the DVD cover, she looks like an elf. But if you look at the manga art or the... anime, she looks like a cat girl. She acts like a cat girl. She's a cat girl. She's of course, again, voiced by Jessica Alvello in English. So I just hear cutie honey. well, actually, no, I actually hit Excel, not cutie honey. But we'll get to that similarity a little bit later. But she's a druid. Like, it's nature spirits that she works with to perform magic, as opposed to, you know, more traditional, you know, magic powers, which plays into, you know, she
yeah, like a fawn.
Yeah, basically. Now she's crushing on a character that we eventually, in a first addition to our crew, which is Lyle, voiced by Jason Douglas, which, fun fact, for anyone who's played Borderlands 2, he voices Krieg the Psycho.
This one, he's playing a lost prince.
He's playing a lost prince. But it is kind of funny that once I heard that, or once I read that, I couldn't unhear Krieg. And if anyone's ever heard the term, "I have the shiniest meat bicycle," that's from Borderlands 2, and that's from Krieg. Highly recommend Borderlands 2. It's a good game. But yeah, no, and like Drew said, he's the prince. He's the lost kingdom prince kind of character.
He'd be the main character in a normal story.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He'd be the lead character in any other fantasy show. You know, and Fom, of course, immediately crushes on him.
Of course.
Because, of course, she does. And just to take a moment, because you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but the art, good lord, the art is...
The gentleman who did this, Mr. Tanaka, to be precise, Kunihiko Tanaka, is apparently, he's done a couple of manga, but his other thing is he's a character designer.
Yes.
So you're looking at something that was done by it's a lot like watching reading the Eva manga, where you have Sadamoto, you know, in his copious free time, knocking out a manga that's, you know, drawn better than 90% of the manga you're ever going to see. Same sort of thing. He has a style that is quite reminiscent of Matsumune Shiro, but with fewer lines.
Well, yeah, it looks like his first real character design work he worked on was actually on East 3, which is another one of those kind of legendary, like the first generation of JRPGs, because East came out in 1987 was the first one.
Yeah,
and
he also did the characters for Key the Metal Idol, believe it or not.
Yeah, he also did Xenosaga as well. Which, looking at those characters, especially the DVD cover art, that really doesn't surprise me. If any of you don't know what I mean by, say, Xenosaga, if any remember the PlayStation character who was the blue-haired android Cosmos, that's Xenosaga. And, that's where that comes from.
But that's probably why it's also only a 2-volume manga. This is probably... put together in his free time.
I absolutely, if you can find the manga out there, I absolutely recommend taking a look at it because it is really well drawn. And it's very interesting to look at as well. So
has some interesting compositional ideas.
Yeah.
And then there's the other pair is our, well, there's, then there's, that's the good half of the party.
Well, that's the first half of the party.
The other, the morally dubious part of the party.
Yes. Which is our treasure hunter pairs. Which is Rasha and Miguel.
Mm-hmm. Who are, again, a magic user and a fighter. Dumb as a...
they're actually kind of really close to... they're kind of really close to Lena and Gowri, sort of. If Lena and Gowri are a little bit more unscrupulous.
Lena and Gowri and the Berserker and the other character from Lotus Wars.
Yeah.
Like I said, they all came out of the same central casting.
Yeah. And it's actually, it's interesting because this has got one of the smallest casts that I've ever actually seen in an RPG show. Because there's only seven.
And then there's the merchant guy. What's his name?
Oh, Galif. I fucking love and hate Galif at the same time.
Well, that's sort of the idea. He's despicable.
Oh yeah, I'm just like, I hate this guy, and yet I love this guy because I hate this guy. Like I'm just like, where has this show been hiding? Because
the other thing that you're seeing in this show that you occasionally catch is another one of those Western cartoon references. Because he has a dog, and it's Muffly.
Yeah, it's Muttley. It's Dick Dastardly and Muttley in an anime form in a fantasy show.
Dick Dastardly is a smarmy merchant, and Muttley.
Yeah.
Slightly done up.
That's like the best way to describe that. Holy shit.
It's Muttley, damn it.
It's Muttley, damn it.
We've seen Muttley show up in a few anime every now and then. It's
just rarely does he show up with Dick Dastardly alongside of him.
In this case, he kind of does.
Oh, there.
Although he never says drat and double drat, so, or anything like that.
Basically, the and then we have I don't even want to try to pronounce the name. The main antagonist, who's basically the Grand Vizier that screwed Lyle's kingdom, because those six characters that we mentioned after like the first dungeon, they're working together. Like all six of them.
Cross purposes most of the time, but yes.
Yeah. And they're trying to stop Rugadoral. I think that's how it's pronounced. It's Rugudurol.
Rugudurol. Gesundheit.
That's the Romanji is Rugudurul.
It's like, sounds like a Doctor Strange villain.
Kinda. But it
looks more a little bit like a Doctor Strange villain now that I think about it. Although he's a little too human. Anyhow, yeah, so, but it's a 4-volume OVA and it is really quickly paced.
It is. It moves.
It's the quest for the Imperial Regalia. If you remember your Imperial Regalia from your Japanese history, you have a mirror, a sword, and I think it was originally a scroll, but in this one's a statue of some kind.
It's the proof of royalty. Proof of royalty is the first one. The sword's the second one. The mirror is the third one, I believe.
Again, it's essentially the Japanese Imperial Regalia slid over into a fantasy world, which is a good set of plot coupons.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they busily work their way through, backstab each other a few times, get in a lot of trouble, flirt with the prince, and eventually have a showdown with the bad guy. It's only 4-volume OVA, and you have 3 treasures, so you're moving at
one treasure per
really
volume.
A quick pace. Yeah, this guy is writing. This is written at a pace that would not disgrace a 70s or 60s classic comic book artist.
Yeah.
I mean, Jack Kirby could write this quick.
And what elevated this for me is... We kind of discussed this off of air, but I swear that Trigger... Someone at Trigger read this manga or saw this OVA.
Or knows the guy who... Or knows Tanaka.
Or knows Tanaka. Because here's why. We have found, when reviewing this, a couple instances where we can see Ruin Explorer's DNA. There's no confirmation on this. This is just purely just looking at it and putting two and two together. Ruin Explorer's DNA in Little Witch Academia. Which, if you are unfamiliar with that show, that is the... basically the Trigger love project.
Wasn't like they didn't already grab from every other possible source for
it's Trigger does Harry Potter, basically.
It's Trigger does Harry Potter with every magical girl to created to time, and as a tribute to classical animation, especially Western animation. Western animation and witch girls.
Yeah. And now you listeners at home may be going, Rick, what are you smoking? What are you getting on about? So I mentioned earlier that Eerie, our main character, has a curse. And that curse was set onto her by her old master, who basically, she used magic to pull, I think, to play a prank on him. And so he cursed her. Well, that curse is every single time that she uses magic, she turns into a mouse. Now you may still be asking... Why are you still banging on about this? It's because the design of the mouse. If you were to take... I just blanked on her name. The main character in which...
Akko.
Thank you.
Akko.
Akko's mouse form. And gave it a 90s aesthetic. It would be Eerie's mouse form. Like... The way they're animated, the way they're drawn. Well, the style's different because, you know, this has got that kind of 90s edge style. You know, the edgier style.
It's all pointy. It's all
pointy style. And Akko is obviously driven in the more modern style.
Put your eye out on that guy's hair.
Yeah. But the way that they move, like, the facial expressions are really similar.
And, like... Again, you also have the whole 60s Hanna-Barbera link.
Yeah.
Through the whole fact that one of your characters has Muttley tagging along with them, for gosh sakes.
And then you pulled out a comparison with Little Witch just in the first episode of this.
Yeah. Which was
when Eerie to prevent herself from falling into spikes by grabbing Fom's tail.
Yeah, it's a pretty close match, if not exact, to the bit where Akko is hanging on to Andrew's boxers when Andrew has been halfway changed into a donkey, and they're trying desperately to find their way through and avoid the Minotaur. Was it a Minotaur at that point, or a grizzly bear? It was a big old monster.
Yeah.
They're avoiding a monster... And she's hanging onto his boxer shorts to keep from falling to the monster. It's a very reminiscent scene. There's a lot of... I have a feeling that somebody worked for this guy at some point or knew him or took a lot of inspiration from him.
It's also entirely too possible. Much
of recent stuff, but...
I wouldn't be surprised if some of the studio animators that worked on this maybe then have moved on to Trigger later on.
Quite possibly.
Because they're not all ex-Gainax.
No, they're not all ex-Gainax. A lot of them are just jobbers.
Yeah.
But the thing is, with Trigger, you can always... Stuff can float to the surface. But yeah, it's... What it is, it's a very quick... It's like Slayer... It's like... How would you say? Maybe the... Dr. Pepper to Slayer's Coca-Cola, the kind of off-flavor version of the same type of story?
No, it's more like... It's more like, I'd say, it's more like Dr. Thunder to, or Dr. K to Slayer's Dr. Pepper.
The off-brand version?
Yeah. Because I, whole time I was watching this, I'm like, you know, I could see Lena and Gowrie and Naga and Amelia, like, just off screen having their own misadventure this entire time.
Well, like, you two, could plop these characters into each other.
Yeah, you could plop these characters into the Slayer's world and they would work.
Yeah. They're in two different fantasy universes. There's obviously a little bit of different world building. But, and Lena's certainly dealt with enough crooked merchants in her time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it feels like it was like ADV bought this because they couldn't get the regular dungeon crawl episodes of Slayers. They only had the OVAs and the movies.
And they were just looking for more.
And this was their next best option. Because this is... Unlike a certain show about space miners, this one is done in a hurry.
Yeah, that's the one upside of this. And even if you get the manga's only two volumes.
Manga's only two volumes and was drawn over like 5 years. I mean, like I said, he drew it in his spare time.
It's essentially a one-shot, or as close to one-shot to being a complete story, really, of this scale,
right.
At least. It's not like a true one-shot, but it's also, you know, not one of those... You know, hey, it's not a mighty. It's not like you said. It's not a Mighty Space Miners.
No, it's not the Mighty Space Miners thing. Actually, it's kind of like Little Witch Academia, the original Anime Mirai project.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a apparently. Small little thing. That's saying, I mean, he did this so he could get the anime done. I think it probably has some of the same story as Nausicaa. It was like this is what I want to do. Okay, that looks pretty good. Looks like. Off-brand Slayers.
Yeah.
But it's well done off-brand Slayers.
Yeah. It's still worth taking a look at if you can.
It does lose the whole massive damage spell stuff.
It does.
You have the magic is a lot lower level for the most part.
Yeah, it's not quite as apocalyptic. But then again, outside of Lena, hardly anyone uses that level of spell as it is.
Yeah, and she only uses it when she absolutely has to, or when she gets pissed off.
Yeah, sometimes in some of the series, she just starts firing it because she's mad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's enough for Ruined Explorers. I definitely recommend picking up, and we'll talk a little bit about that at the end.
It's a nice little gem, but good luck finding it cheap. I think it's like at $100 right now.
Yeah, it's this kind of ended up turning a tale of the disc, because it is sort of a tale of the tape actually. Because yes, there is a DVD release of it, but if you want to, you know, pick it up without selling a kidney, you got to settle for VHS. Because I think I found it on VHS for like $10. I want to say. Let me just check.
Yeah, you might find it in the bargain bin of somebody who doesn't read the internet often enough. Or doesn't believe in those ridiculous internet prices.
You can find some. Now it gets up there quick, I'm seeing it anywhere from Ruin Explorers promo dubbed ADV with white cassettes, $10 on Etsy. DVD about $15, $12 to $15. Is what I'm seeing. That's the ADV release.
Oh, the ADV release. Okay, yeah, it's there's a real brief print run after the license got saved, and that's the one that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
If you find the old ADV one,
but it's not a case of you're not going to run across it easily. I mean, in terms of Rune Explorers, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 DVD hits on Google, and then I start getting into things talking about Britain's ancient sites.
I will say this, I don't think I have it, and if I do, it's buried in my one Chinese basket. of really old and obscure shit, because, and I have a lot of old, of obscure and old anime, and I just never got around to grabbing this one.
I mean, that's kind of a reality sometimes when talking about old anime, is that in some cases, like, piracy's talked about a lot. I would just say if you have the means, absolutely support the original creators, support, you know, the official channels. Sometimes you, for this old stuff, you don't have a choice. You got to get it however you can.
The other thing you can do is talk about it. If you talk about it enough and somebody has the rights, it may come out again.
Exactly. So, you know, the only way to get
eventually
people to know
some
it,
of our ridiculous priced Megazone 2-3, our namesake, is hopefully going to come out
in Blu-ray.
In Blu-ray. With lots of bells and whistles and everything, too, if you want them. But it's going to be like the end of the year, because the guy who's doing the pack-in comic book can't hardly get any assistance to work with him because of plague.
Yeah.
Even in Japan, so.
Yeah,
okay.
That's absolutely
so this is the, this is like the Slayers turned, Slayers through somebody else's glasses.
Yeah, and it's an anime,
and it's a short manga made into a short OVA.
Yeah, I mean, basically the manga can be used as a, is basically a you know, storyboards with one major exception, and that's that the whole mouse thing. I was mentioning this earlier. They actually hold off on revealing that until episode 2 of the anime.
Yeah, but they also don't bring in the rest of the party until the second episode either.
Well, no, they're present in the first one, but that's the second episode is where they kind of come together.
Yeah.
But so yeah, we go from this short manga made into a short anime into a long manga made into a short anime.
Really short anime. As in 2 chapters, 2 episodes.
Yeah.
And this one, I remember this one because this one got played on the big screen at the Ohio State Anime Club back before it got licensed. And people were watching it and people were falling out of their chairs laughing.
Because it is super screwball.
It is stupid, it is silly, it is funny, and it is called Dragon Half.
Oh, it's dumb as a box of hammers.
Yes, but they're funny. But it's a bunch of it's as dumb as a box of squeaky hammers, is what it is. It's very silly. The basic premise is, a king sent a knight to kill a dragon. He married her instead. That is, the knight married the dragon. Not. You know what I'm talking about. Now his daughter has come of age, and is finding her way in the world. And they're busy trying to skewer every fantasy cliche and a certain show's tournament arc in 2 volumes. And I've said before that sometimes Eiko, for instance, had bad comic timing. Dragon Half has beautiful comic timing. Because these jokes are not that great, but they sell them wonderfully. I mean, you have Mink, the half-dragon, who just wants to listen to Dick Saucer, the famous singing knight, songs.
The fact that that was the guy's name, that's just how you know they're not taking it seriously. I mean, it's this is the Excel Saga of the 90s, is what this is.
This is
just shorter.
It's incredibly short, and it's very silly. And you have Damaru, because the king has to have, you know, a heavy. So you have Damaru and his Mount Roshi.
By the way.
And Damaru is in a show that's full of dumb characters. Damaru.
His brain is so compact he only nicked. Oh, God. I just looked at
his
voice cast. So Mink is played by Jessica Calvello.
Again.
So that's. This is the Jessica Calvello show. Sorry, Jessica, we don't have money to pay you royalties.
Sorry.
But I just want to point out, Damaru is voiced by... Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Damaru is also a voice actor in Rune Explorers. So the the swordsman from Rune Explorers, you know, the proud swordsman. Oh shit, yes. I just realized they're the same fucking character.
Pretty much.
And Donald they're both voiced just... by Guy Daigoji.
Yes.
They're both voiced by Brett Weaver.
There you go. And then you have the... And we haven't even mentioned the princess yet. And her deep, dark secret.
Yeah, these...
And the king's smarmy advisor, who's always trying to get some credit for his brilliant ideas, and is always forestalled by the king and the princess threatening to execute them.
Yeah, these show... Okay, I'm going to be honest. When I decided to put these two together, I didn't realize how similar they actually are.
Well, they're also, like I said, they're both ADV from that era, and yeah. You have a lot of overlap in characters.
Well, yeah, but I'm also just talking about in terms of the the jokes.
Some of the jokes. I would say the main joke is the rivalry between the princess and Mink for the hand and various other parts. Get your mind out of the gutter of the singing knight Dick Saucer, who has sworn to slay every dragon in the world. Mink has wings and a tail. You figure this one out.
And horns.
And horns. And little horns.
By the way, I also want to point out, like, Dragon Half is super recognizable because of the eye design.
True.
Like, anyone else uses that style of eyes.
It also has more instances of characters going chibi than any other anime I know of.
Well, it's weird because you've got the full size version,
mm-hmm.
Then you've got the sort of like half super mm-hmm. deformed, like the ones where they just have like really thick legs and they're like half height, mm-hmm. And then you have the like chibi, which is like quarter height.
Yeah.
And it's seamlessly transition from one to the other.
The first episode is, you know, Mink and her friends wandering around, having adventures, running into the main characters, seeing off Damaru. He does most of the work himself. And generally just, you know, having fun. Then the second one they do... Now, remember, we said this had a lot of manga. This had like 23 chapters as a manga. It was a pretty long-running sucker.
No, 65 chapters.
65 chapters. 7 volumes.
It ran for 6 years.
There's a lot of padding involved. When they cut this down, they went from that chapter, which is built up of most of the first chapter, and then they decided to do a tournament arc. Any resemblance of this tournament arc to a certain show that also had dragons in it is entirely intentional.
Yes, considering the sequel one-shot's name.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon Half Z.
Dragon Half Z.
By the way...
is where Mink enters the super brutal martial arts tournament to win enough money to go see the Dick Saucer concert. Except Dick Saucer is also in the tournament. And so is the princess. And so is this mysterious demon lord's son, who seems to have a past with her. But as he discovers... Cut this voice in for,
Well, then you also have Domber being in there as well.
Cut it in Tiffany Grant's voice. They cut all my scenes! Yes, the character produces a videotape in the middle of the movie, discovers that he's been cut out of the first episode. Well, I don't care about narrative continuity. I'm still going to kill you.
This is... It is so...
It also features such wonderful lines as, I saw someone's goodies.
Oh my god. I didn't even realize that. Because it's manga only. So you know... Mink's best friend.
Yes, the
Lufa.
Yes.
Do you know who her parents are?
No, I don't remember because I don't.
Link and Zelda.
Oh dear.
From Legend of Zelda. Oh,
there you
by
go.
The way, Pia?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other friend of theirs?
The little pipsqueak in armor.
Yeah, that's Peach and Mario's kid.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
That's the level of jokes we're working with, folks.
Yeah. But, yeah, you have Doug Finn, the son of Asgardoreth, the Demon King, who's also in this tournament. But he's a little kid. But he's also an incredibly powerful sorcerer. And he's going to beat Mink whether or not it interferes with narrative continuity. And the princess is trying to beat Mink. But she doesn't have as... She has a plan. She's a mean plan. Doesn't quite work.
Dick Saucer
doesn't get very far in the tournament. We won't explain why. You got to see it for yourself.
Do we reveal the princess's secret, or should they find out for them her horrible secret for themselves?
Let's just say Mink is a dragon half. The princess has a horrible secret in her ancestry, and it's very Japanese fantasy. And we'll leave it at that.
Let's just say it goes all the way back to the beginning of our last episode.
It goes all the way back. And you have the king and the princess and his daughter the princess arguing all the time, getting in fights, threatening to boil their assistant in oil on occasion. Their assistant has a bucket of dry ice he carries around occasionally so he can appear from the fog. It's that kind of show, folks. And it's all takes less than an hour for the whole thing. And we haven't even mentioned the end credits song. Which is possibly even sillier than the show. Have you ever heard of a silly song about boiling eggs set to Beethoven's Fifth? Now you have.
So
you need to listen to it. That needs to be the play-out music, Rick.
I'll have to find it. You find it for me, and I'll make it the play-out music.
Oh, it'll be... Just look on YouTube. You can find it in 10 seconds.
All right, I will do that. So that'll be our play music tonight. One of the things I kind of want to talk about with Dragon Half, especially, is we talked about how it's a short anime out of a long manga.
Long-ish.
But it's kind of... Like I said earlier, it was kind of the Excel saga of its era. And when I was watching this, I'm like, did Nabashin have anything to do with this? For those of you who don't know, Nabashin is a fairly well-known director. That's Shinichi Watanabe. He is a bit of an eccentric. I actually met him once in line for Greek food at OhioCon.
Oh, at that place.
Yes, it was the year that we were, it was just actually about, I think 2 years ago. I think, it was when we were getting ready for the Matsumoto episode. I went to OhioCon. I'd have to check. But no, I remember running into him because he's, when you run into Nabashin, you kind of notice.
Not many Japanese have a perm.
Yeah, 2018. It was the year before. It was the year before. It was our last OhioCon that we went to. Mm-hmm. I don't freaking know.
Anyway, it was one of the many Ohio cons that you have been to.
Yes, I ran into him at a con in Ohio, in line for the Greek place, and I didn't recognize it was him until wait a minute, that was a Japanese man, wearing sunglasses, and I looked it up. And I'm like, holy shit, that was Nabashin. but yeah, no, he's. He's kind of known for very odd shows. Like, they're comedies, but very irreverent screwball comedies. Some of his most well-known ones are Excel Saga, Puni Puni Poemi, and then also Naruba Daikon Brothers is another one that I... Naruba Daikon Brothers is like a self-aware Blues Brothers anime. It's really bizarre. And it yeah, the comedy in those is like exactly like the comedy in Dragon Half. Like the same kind.
It's very rapid fire. I would say Dragon Half has a little bit more plot. Actually is a little bit more plot based, but not by much.
Not by much.
Just enough plot that it can get away with a lot more of the anticipation. Like the, well, if you do want to enter the tournament, we only have room for 8 entries, so can you beat the gateway monster, Minotaurus? And there's a 40-foot tall Kokoron Ken-looking Minotaur behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Ready? Go! Splat! Right this way.
Any interaction with the vizier in the king is also great as well.
Oh yeah, the vizier and the king, and it goes to inappropriate places whenever it's funny.
Yeah, but only when it's funny.
But only when it's funny, and it makes it funny.
Yeah, and then it usually backtracks very quickly.
Yeah, it doesn't go that far along it. And then you also have the, you know, the dragon and the knight are, of course, no longer, they're an old married couple, so they're, you know, fighting amongst the house half the time.
Yeah. So, well, that's, so is there anything else? I guess we should probably kind of go about...
Has Dragon Half been reprinted yet?
It says it was picked up by Discotech.
Okay. I want to have a quick look at Amazon to see how much they want for it at the moment.
So, unfortunately for Ruin Explorers, you're kind of... Made in Japan did pick up the license, but we were unable to confirm whether or not that they did, in fact, did do a run. Everything I'm finding is the old ADV stuff. Dragon Half... Dragon Half was picked up by Discotech. But we're, again, unsure if it's ever been re-released... Has the manga for Dragon Half ever been released in the U.S.?
Not legally. I think there was talk of it a while back, but I don't...
Not legally.
Omnibus. Yeah, apparently it was.
Oh, it was?
But it was... Yeah.
Everything in one?
An omnibus would probably be 2.
Okay.
3. So three omnibus.
It was released in...
I'm trying to...
Big chunks.
Big chunks. Trying to see who printed it. It's
Seven Seas is listed as the English publisher.
I think I remember when that came out, because it was a fairly limited thing, and I also remember because I'd seen the manga, and the problem is the manga just drags out. It doesn't have nearly the timing that the anime does. The anime is bright and funny and kind of silly, and I think the manga takes the Dick Saucer love story a little too seriously.
I think that's kind of part of what makes me think of it as Excel, because if you look at Excel Saga, the manga, and look at Excel Saga, the anime, they are almost like two different things. Like, there's a lot of the same jokes, but they go in different directions.
That's what happens when you have a different, you know, director.
Well, that's what happens when you have Namashii. Because he will go off in his own direction if he feels like it.
Yeah, he'll just dive off wherever the feeling takes him.
He will go.
In the wild winds of fortune, the berry beyond, where whithersoever I go. No, it looks like there was a I see $200 copies of Fom and Eerie for Ruin Explorers, like it was a preliminary that never got printed.
Ooh, well, that's for the manga?
Made in Japan. It's made in Japan.
Okay.
But it's not... Never came out. Now, that's not... Because Made in Japan is ADV adjacent, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And that's like the Prefectural Earth Defense Force. They made like a couple hundred of those on disc total. I've seen one. They wanted 120 $20 for it. I could not justify spending. And I agreed. It's actually a rare collectible, but it's not that good that I'm going to spend $120 for something I'll watch three times. So most of this stuff is pretty, is reasonably easy to find and will probably slide back into print. I suspect Ruin Explorers will slide into print when Made in Japan has a gap in their schedule and needs to work out where they're going with the next one. But the, yeah, it's interesting to see high fantasy through a entirely different lens. Although I will point out that none of these fantasies have any Michael Moorcock influence really into them. Unlike a lot, fair amount of other Japanese fantasy, if you're going dark in Japanese fantasy, you generally go down the dark Moorcock end of things.
Yeah.
Think Griffin, amongst others. Yeah. There are a lot of guys with cursed swords that are smarter than they are.
So I think that about wraps up this week's episode. Join us for next week's episode, because we're going into another one of our director dives. We're going into Shiro again.
The early Shiro.
Early Shiro. So that should be interesting.
Before the Ghost in the Shell.
Yes.
Yes, Shiro was big before Ghost in the Shell. Shocking, I know, but he was.
That said, he didn't quite stray that far when it comes to the subject matter.
No. Ghost in the Shell was not a departure for him. It just was a whole lot more successful.
So, join us when we talk about Shiro in our next episode. But until then, I've been Rick.
I've been Drew.
And just remember, someone
had to draw that.
In my thoughts and in my dreams, they're always in my mind. These songs of Hobbits, dwarves, and men, and men.